This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hello and welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name's Jamie Loftus.
And my name's Caitlin Durante.
And this is our podcast about the portrayal of women in movies.
Woo-woo!
Insert air horns.
We use the Bechdel test as a way.
Oh, sorry, it sounded like I was surprised.
We do. The Bechdel test, if you're not familiar, is a test that requires that a movie has two female identifying characters. Mm-hmm. They have to have names. Mm-hmm. They have to speak to each other, and they cannot be talking about men.
Hey, can we beta test it really quick?
Let's do it.
Okay. Hey, Caitlin.
Hey, Jamie.
You were really good at soccer this morning.
Thank you so much for coming to my game.
You're welcome. Wholesome. Doesn't have to be funny. Can be very wholesome.
Yeah, just very sincere.
Great game.
Yeah, Jamie, you came to my game and I really appreciate it.
I just need
it.
Everyone to know.
What a good and supportive friend you are.
Yeah, it's really more about me than it is about you. No, you were. It was great. It was fun.
Yeah, thank you.
And it passes the Bechdel test because it's an all-women's team.
It's an all-women's league.
Wow.
So, yeah, my soccer games always pass the Bechdel test. Every game.
And except when you start screaming about the takedown of the patriarchy in the middle during the halftime show,
right,
which is great.
Well, sometimes we do yell at the usually male ref, so I guess those don't pass, but most of our conversations are about soccer. So we use that test, the Bechdel test, as a jumping off point to initiate larger conversations about the general representation and portrayal of women in cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And we are here to talk about a movie, a popular request.
I'm so
still
excited.
In theaters.
Yes.
We're talking about Crazy Rich Asians.
Woo.
And with us, we've got two guests.
Super episode.
Ooh, it's a super, yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
our first guest, new to the pod, she's a TV writer, a comedian, Sita Shong. And we have a returning guest, a friend of the cast. You may remember her from our Transformers episode.
Friend of the Hey Sluts What's Up Network.
Hell yeah. And she hosts her own podcast called You Can Tell Me Anything. Teresa Lee.
Hi. Both of you guys have been on.
Yes. It's true.
Woo.
Yay.
We're so excited to have you
which
here.
One of us is the crazy and which one of us is the rich?
I mean, we have to draw straws.
I just want to be the Asian.
So, Teresa, we'll start with you. What's your history with this?
Oh, I read the book when it came out. It's a good read. It's like a, you know, a beach read, a summer romp, if you will. And I obviously identify with the main character because she's from the Bay and then went to NYU.
Oh, yeah. She is, whoa.
Is Taiwanese. Well, maybe not. If there's a sequel. Anyways, but she thinks she's Taiwanese. And so, yeah, I read the book. I remember when it came out, I read it, and I found a tweet from a long time ago where it's like, I hope they make a movie out of this, and I hope I'm in Hollywood when that happens.
What?
But it didn't happen.
Look at you now.
I didn't make it that far, so.
You were physically in Hollywood.
Yeah. I should have been more specific about my wish. But
manifest more specifically.
Right.
And Sita, how about you?
I think I read the book when it came out, too, because the title was, like clickbait before clickbait. But I really enjoyed it.
Sure.
You know, it was like, I read a lot of Joan Collins when I was a kid because I just had bargain books in my house all the time because my mom wouldn't buy me new books. Mm-hmm. So I read a lot of, like, 80s Joan Collins. And that's what Crazy Rich Asians reminds me of.
Sure.
That, like, super shoulder padded, like, extravagance.
Jamie?
I read the first book. I received the first book as a gift, and I read it on a couple different... It was just my plain book for a while. Mm. Liked the book. Thought it was like a fun beach read that I happened to be reading on a plane.
Sure.
And then saw the movie last week and really liked the movie.
Yeah, we saw it together.
We did!
Yay.
It was fun.
I did not read the book, but I did watch the movie 3 times in theaters, so...
That's basically I reading a book.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, you beat me. I saw it twice.
Okay.
Yeah. You beat both of us. Both of the Asians here.
I just wanted to make sure I was adequately prepared, so I saw it many, many times. So I'll do the recap.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so the story focuses... Well, first we open on a scene where Eleanor Young is trying to check into a hotel in London, and a bunch of white people are like, you don't belong here, please go away. And she's like, actually, I'm buying this hotel, so fuck all y'all. So that sort of sets up the Young family.
Fun power move. Mm-hmm. You can get off.
Yeah. And then we see Nick Young as a little boy in that scene. And I think he's with, is it Astrid?
I think so.
Is that the little girl?
The little girl.
Is there, that makes sense.
So his cousin. And then we cut to present day. We meet Rachel Chu. She is an econ professor at NYU. She is dating Nick Young, who is very hot and who is very good at wearing pants.
Not wearing a shirt.
Yes.
He wears a lot of pants.
Fitted pants. He's just very fitting.
He just knows how to wear a pair of pants.
A tailored pair of pants. I was like, were these made for your butt? It's wild.
He can afford it, so probably.
Imagine being able to afford pants with your butt in mind.
Unbelievable. Jamie, when we were watching this together, you turned to me at a certain point in the movie. I'm pretty sure you had tears in your eyes, and you said, Nick Young is just so handsome.
I was fully crying at Nick Young being just too hot at one point that I just was sent over the edge and I began to cry.
Yeah.
It was a worldwide casting for Nick Young's character, and apparently one of my friends told me that he was on one of those travel shows that shows on the back of airplane seats.
Yeah, he was a host.
No way!
He wasn't even an actor. No. He's never like done something like this. He was just a host that was very charismatic, and they were like, how about that guy?
I'm sure he did a great job acting, but I was just like, oh! Like, I just was really overwhelmed. I also, I would say that the Mike's Hard Lemonade I brought to the theater with me probably contributed to sending me over the edge in the first 20 minutes of the movie. But
yeah, understandable. Yes. So Rachel and Nick are dating, and Nick invites her to Singapore because his best friend Colin is getting married and he's the best man. So he's like, why don't we use this as an excuse for you to come and meet my family, and you can visit your friend while you're there, and it'll be a great time. And she's like, okay. So they go to, they're like at the airport, and she's like, I've got my Tupperware food, we're all good. And then the airline people come up to them and they're like, we'll get you checked into first class. And she's like, excuse me, what do you mean? And then they're like, here's some champagne, here's an airplane bedroom. And she's like, wait a minute, Nick, are you rich or something? And he's like... IDK, I guess. And she's wait a minute.
IDK might be BFF Jill for a while. He's like,
we're comfortable.
I was like, dog, you are rich.
So she learns that he comes from an extremely wealthy family of like real estate moguls and like finance people and all this stuff. So she goes and meets his mom, Nick's mom, Eleanor. And Eleanor's like, this girl is not rich, so gross.
She's not crazy or rich.
So basically, the story revolves around Rachel trying to earn the respect and the blessing of Eleanor, because it seems like she and Nick are on like the track for marriage. And because Rachel is Chinese American, she was raised in the U.S. and she just has sort of like
she's
a different
an
set
ABC
of values.
Is what we call them.
Oh, wait, what does that stand for?
American born Chinese. Mm. That's what they used to call us when we went to Taiwan.
Oh.
That's what Awkwafina says in the movie, too. She says banana, which is like yellow on the outside, white on the inside.
Got it. Okay.
I'd never heard that either. Okay.
So because she just sort of has like a different set of values than like the Young family, Eleanor's all like, she's not the right person. Like, she's not the one for you, Nick. But Nick is like enamored and in love with Rachel. Over the course of the story, you know, Rachel's like trying to like make Eleanor like her, basically. And Eleanor keeps being like, you will never be enough. And then finally, at the wedding that they've gone to Singapore for, Eleanor has hired a private investigator and reveals some information about Rachel's mom's history that would have caused like a huge scandal, where her mom had an affair with another man who wasn't her husband, got pregnant with his baby, and then left him in China and moved to the U.S. So that was like grounds for like basically dismissal, for like Eleanor to be like, go away, never talk to us again.
That part is like, I feel like one of the most believable things too, because I mean, I'm sure American culture people hide things all the time, but especially in Chinese culture, I feel like there's just so many secrets, but they're secrets where it's like families will just be like so overbearing in one way, but then also so like, oh no, I just didn't tell you that your grandma died because I decided it was best for you. And so there's things like that all the time. And so like the fact that all these families have these secrets, I'm like, oh yeah, that's exactly true. So weird. Like, because her and her mom have a good relationship.
Yeah.
She's just like lied her entire life. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then it's revealed that whenever Rachel like kind of confronts her mom about it, her mom's like, oh, well, my husband was abusive and I left him because he was hurting me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they have a really good relationship. So then Nick proposes to Rachel and he's like, I will leave my family behind. Like, you know, he's supposed to be next in line to run the Young Corporation. He's like, I'll walk away from all of that. I just want to be with you. And then we cut immediately to a scene where she has invited Eleanor to play Mahjong with her. And she's like, I'm playing a losing hand. Either way, like, Nick either leaves his family and then, like, that's not good because he doesn't have a family. Or he chooses his family and doesn't stay with me, and then he will end up resenting you, his mom. So she basically rejects him, his marriage proposal, so that she's basically making the choice for him. And then that is the thing that makes Eleanor be like, oh my God, she is enough. She's strong and she's a fighter and she's good enough for me. So then she finally gives her blessing, because then Nick reproposes with his mom's ring.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, and we're all like,
they
yay!
Like set it up so that was set up so well, I feel like.
And I think the ring was great, because the ring was the ring that Eleanor's husband, Nick Young's dad, had to create especially for her, because the matriarch wouldn't give up her old ring.
Right.
So the ring is also like symbolic of like a marriage that wasn't approved by the families, and now it passed on to like another.
And the idea that traditions can be malleable, because now it's a tradition because it's his mom. But when it was created, it was because she wasn't allowed to continue the tradition. So it's like, see, it's a
new tradition.
New tradition.
Yeah.
Unapproved wives.
The Unapproved Wives Club.
So then she says yes this time. And then they go and have like an engagement party on a rooftop in Singapore. There's a few subplots where Nick's cousin Astrid is dealing with her marriage to a guy named Michael. He was like also a commoner who marries into this rich family.
A guy named Michael is always a red flag, no matter what.
So there's that subplot. And then we meet many of other Nick's families. And then we meet Paiklin, which is Awkwafina's character, and like her family. So we've got a whole cast of characters. But yeah, so that's the main storyline.
There's also a lot of twin representation in this film I feel like nobody's talking about. There are three pairs of twins.
Wait, really?
That I recognize, or maybe more if I watch it again.
So, like, Awkwafina.
Her sister's twins. Awkwafina's sister.
Her little baby sister.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, her sisters.
Then there's the adult gossipy twins that are at the Bachelorette.
Oh, yeah.
That they call the twins. And then there's the flower girls are also twins. And they couldn't be Awkwafina's sisters because it wouldn't make sense.
They weren't invited.
Awkwafina's sisters
would
be there.
Because they wouldn't know them.
So there's at least three pairs of Asian girl twins, which I feel like is like a big win for me because I am an Asian girl twin. So. Yeah. And I was a flower girl in a wedding in Malaysia. But the rehearsal was in Singapore. So it's like, it's basically a story of my life.
Yeah. I bet like Asian girl twins are hot commodity during wedding season. And they're just like, look at the pair of cuties walking down the aisle.
Yeah, we crushed it.
Full twin season. It's, well, I mean, Gemini season in the spring anyways, so.
Are twins especially lucky?
No, I think they're unlucky, especially because they're girls.
I guess I just want to start by saying that, I mean, this movie is a box office hit right now. It's what everyone's talking about.
Second weekend number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a genuine blockbuster. I feel like it's like a rom-com, but also like it's funny and it's tight. It feels like a blockbuster.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a solid flick. And we've...
A solid flick. Caitlin Dredge, 2018.
Oh, you know.
My mom saw it with her... former colleague, they were airline ladies, what are they, flight attendants together in Taiwan, and they're still friends, and she came to visit her from Taiwan, and they went and watched it, and I was like, that's cute.
That's so awesome.
Her friend is kind of like a Crazy Rich Asian, though.
Oh, really?
Like,
oh, wow.
I think she's not this Crazy Rich, but she's very like, she's more like an educated rich Asian.
Okay. Rich enough to be like, can relate?
Yeah, I think she's into it.
Wow. Cool. Cool.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then we will come back to discuss Crazy Rich Asians. Woo!
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Thursday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
And we're back.
Hello.
Welcome.
We're here.
We're here.
It's Sunday. We're literally a brunch club right now.
Yes.
It's great.
Yeah, I read that a lot of like Asian immigrant people and parents, ones who normally never go to the movies, are seeing this movie because they're seeing themselves represented for like the first time in a very... This is the first American movie that's an all-Asian cast since, I think, Joy Luck Club?
Yeah.
Like 25 years ago.
I mean, it's funny too, because it's like, even if you don't... Because a lot of the criticism before the movie came out was that it's not relatable because it's about crazy rich people. But I think it's like... So, I mean, like, when we watch superhero movies, it's like, is that relatable?
Right.
So I think that's a dumb thing, because it's like, I don't know, we got to start somewhere. Like, do you really want to watch a movie about people doing nothing, sitting around... getting high. I mean, maybe. Actually, that's like Harold and Kumar. Also, by the way, Harold and Kumar is also leading Asian cast, and people keep forgetting that that's That's because true. People, it's billed as a stoner movie, yeah, not an Asian movie.
Right. But I guess that wasn't a major studio movie.
I
maybe
feel like it did really well. Everybody yeah. talked about
there's
it.
Also, there's a lot of white people in the, in so it's not too. Like an entirely Asian cast. Right, true. Cast like
but the leads are Asian. Mm-hmm. So more leads should have been Asian after that, but everybody seemed to forget that that did well. But
yeah. That was mainly a boon for White Castle.
True. Yeah, white is in the name. Yeah. This is a white movie. That's the only way they could get the movie to made. It's like, put something white in this title yeah. to trick the audience.
Did you guys know that there was a very Harold and Kumar 3D Christmas?
Yeah, I think I've seen it because it was on TV one year.
Whoa.
Without the 3D glasses, you saw it?
Yeah.
They showed it originally.
There was something about a Christmas tree. That's why I think that's what that
oh,
was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Whoa. Well, either way, we've come a long way from like, Mickey Rooney's character in Breakfast at Tiffany's, mm-hmm. from like the Long Duck Dong in 16 Candles, even from like Scott Pilgrim, where like Knives Chow, mm-hmm. so much like tone deaf stuff is said about that character.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're still a far cry from what it should be representation wise for nearly yeah. everybody.
Well, mm-hmm. we're interested in like what your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Are.
Well, I actually think, because for me, it's not representation isn't just, I mean, half of it is visual, because of course, the more Asian people we see, the more we'll realize like, oh, okay, like we can be in movies. But I also really like that the story itself is representative, because it's just, like someone I saw it with said this well, it's like, it's just, it's funny because the jokes are new because it's a new point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So that like does well for everyone. It's not something we've heard before, mm-hmm. but it's not explicitly an Asian movie. Like the story about family and about tradition isn't explicitly Asian. It's very tied to Asian culture.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think obviously we relate to it more, but anybody can watch it and not think like, oh, this isn't for me, because everybody totally. Has a mom like that. I think we can all relate to it. So I really like that it's representative in the story itself, just like the point of view.
For sure.
Yeah, and I was thinking about this because my boyfriends are watching the Godfather trilogy over again, mm-hmm. and watching that movie over again, which is probably like the most famous movie mm-hmm. in America, you realize that like the Godfather trilogy is an immigrant story. It's not, yeah. it's really American, but it's also about an immigrant story. So I was thinking about that in context of Crazy Rich Asians, and I was like, oh, this is an immigrant story. It's like finding your identity, making a new life for yourself, all those things that are kind of what being American is all about. Mm-hmm. So that to me was really relatable. I actually bought tickets for my parents to go see it. And my mom was like, this is good, but.
So Asian.
What were her notes? This is very also just more about my mom than anything yeah. else. Her notes were that it was too loud.
Oh my God, that's funny.
She was like, it's so loud.
It's funny, like moms don't realize. I don't know if my mom recognizes herself in Eleanor Young. Like she's yeah. not that strict, but like it's funny because I don't think people recognize themselves in it, you know?
Yeah, and my mom's point about their wealth was also really funny too. She was just like, oh, it was so over the top. It was so extravagant. Like nobody lives like that. And I was like, well, that's the point of the movie, Mom. It's in the title. It's in the title. But I think a lot of the criticism leveled at the movie, I mean, I enjoyed it. I sort of see the shortcomings, like, but I think it's because there's not enough of this kind of movie. There's mm-hmm. not enough movies where there's like a majority Asian cast. There's not mm-hmm. enough movies kind of with an Asian-centered story. Mm-hmm. If you have like a variety of like a body of work to choose from, like we've been able to name like five movies made over like the last 40 years, which is like not a body of work. That's right. Like five movies.
Right.
So if you had a body of work to actually critique against, then it would be interesting. Right now we're just like picking like.
Right. Like if yeah. there were like more stories about Asian people who are middle class.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then you could be like, okay, well, then, like, Crazy Rich Asians, like, yeah, that's a lifestyle that most people don't lead, but, like, there are many other examples of Asian stories, but the problem is there aren't many other yeah. examples.
I even think as a rom-com, it's diverse in the storytelling because most rom-coms will have a meet-cute, but this starts mm-hmm. in a point of the relationship when it's healthy, nothing's going wrong. Right. They do introduce his mom, and it's like there's some lies that have been told, but like, you know, every relationship has its bumps, and then they deal with it, and it still feels cohesive, and there's an arc. And usually, I feel like rom-coms aren't like that.
Right.
And mm-hmm. it doesn't end in their wedding. So it feels like a realistic sort of sliver of their life where it's like, this is a thing they had to get through. They got through it. I feel a resolution.
Right. The arc of the story has to do with the relationship between Rachel and Eleanor, not yeah. really Rachel and Nick.
Yeah.
So it's yeah, it's more about like a class struggle, a generation gap kind of thing, a like American Asian person versus an Asian person from Asia. Like it's
right.
So yeah, it's like those are the themes of the movie, and
her
it's
monologue
their story.
About like Americans caring about passion like got to me so much. I was just like, oh, why am I doing comedy? Like, I've let my people down. Like, just what am I doing?
There's this big, it's very much East versus West, you know? It's individualism versus collectivism, and Eleanor is on the side of collectivism because she'll do anything.
But she's not. See, that's also why I feel like it's a diverse angle, because I don't think any side is really portrayed as, like, the right side in this. Rachel's not really portrayed totally right. She's a little selfish, but Eleanor's, she says she's all about the collective, but look at her house. I mean, like, she's not, I don't think handing out food to the poor people. Like, I don't think she cares about her country, but, like, does she? I mean, like, they're starving people.
She cares about her family, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, so it's like everybody's kind of selfish. Mm-hmm.
The unit is the family, which is a larger unit than the self, which is, like,
Until there's a black sheep in the family, and then you cut that person out, and then they're not in your family, so your family can be perfect. I feel like that's a very Asian thing to do.
Yeah.
Well, the character of Oliver says that he's like the rainbow sheep of the family because he's like the one like out queer person.
Yeah.
But it seems like he still has good enough relationships with like all of his like aunties and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm curious your guys' thoughts too, because I do feel like obviously so much is tied to Chinese culture, but it's all those like themes of just like your, you know, the filial piety is really tied to Chinese culture. But also I feel like people outside can follow along. Were there things that to you felt so new that was like, oh, that's something that like I don't understand or like that doesn't click? Or did it all like feel like, yeah, this all makes sense, I can track?
To me, it all tracked. There were certainly things that like I hadn't experienced firsthand in my family setting or anything like that. Because like I'm like German and Italian, but like so far removed from those cultures that I really feel like I was brought up to be like cultureless somehow. Uh-huh. Like I didn't have like an Italian grandma like cooking us big Italian dinners or anything. Like they're just like really just like the most boring flat American experience.
Casserole,
you can have
white bread.
Exactly.
Mayonnaise.
Hamburger helper, like, so like,
yo, don't knock hamburger.
So nothing was so unfamiliar to me that I was like, what, I don't, this doesn't make sense or this doesn't track. But it was certainly experiences that I have not had. But that's why it's so important to have movies like this where, you know, people like me and I would say a large portion of white America can like see these stories and see these cultures represented and say like, wow, this is different from my own. And it's, you know, delivered to us respectfully and in a way where, you know, we can learn about a different culture.
Yeah, I feel like it did a good job of being critical without, like, it was authentic so that because like I'm critical of my own culture, as we all should be of everything, right? Because nothing's perfect. And that's how we get better. So I feel like it did a good job of being critical without feeling like it was like exotifying anything.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like it was like white gaze-y, like, oh, look how weird they are.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like it was like criticizing from within, but also understanding where they're coming from. Like the table scene when they're making the dumplings, I really liked that scene because you see the generations and the kids joking. Even like Astrid, who understands because she grew up there, makes a joke about like, oh, like they don't guilt their kids.
Right.
And it's like, oh, you see how there are flaws. I don't think we should just be like, Asian people on TV, they're perfect. They're not. Like, we've got a lot of issues. We believe in ghosts, like all this shit. It's like, what's going on over there?
Well, we can't have it in TV.
Yeah.
It's censorship. Like,
depression's not real. But
mental illness is an issue. Sexism is such a problem in Asia. Like, that's why there's so many girls that are left in orphanages because, you know, the sons are favored. So that it's not kind of talked about in the movie, but there's a reason why Henry Golding's character is so important because he's the son.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they didn't have a daughter that was taking over the young corporation.
Right.
It was the son, which, like, is, like, a big deal.
I think the movie makes it so that we're able to be critical of it without feeling like we're, like, antagonizing or, like, vilifying a whole culture because it's very well-rounded in its criticism. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, though I felt like the most of the stuff that I just was like, oh, that's not something I'm familiar with or fully understand were specifics inside of a larger narrative that, you know, is a rom-com, which seems really smart. And like,
yeah, what's love? I didn't get that. Like, I didn't understand
kissing
that.
Kissing and also sex? I'm a virgin, me don't understand. But no, it was like, I don't know. I mean, in terms of presenting a movie with a culture that the majority of the audience won't be familiar with, I feel like it was like, it's so smart to put it in a construct that mm-hmm. everyone's going to understand. Everyone, whether they like it or not, have seen a rom-com and yeah. understands the general conventions, for better or worse, of a rom-com. And seeing things I didn't fully understand plugged into a larger structure that I definitely understand was cool and like made it easier for me on first viewing it, at least to be like, oh, okay, here are the things that I didn't completely understand or that was just new to me. And now I can just go and try to learn about those things and figure out what their context were in this kind of not entirely familiar story, but like a romantic comedy that wasn't like, wait, what's happening? You know?
Yeah. Well, like the unfamiliar stuff. I'm curious.
Well, like the Mahjong scene, where yeah. I was like, they are playing a game that I have no idea how to play. And I read an article after I saw the movie that explains, like, there's a very important, like, significance to, like, Rachel's hand, yeah. where she, like, gives up a specific tile, and it's symbolic of, like, her basically giving up her relationship mm-hmm. with Nick, so that there's, like, all that symbolism there.
I wasn't allowed to play Mahjong because my mom's dad, like, gambled away their house when they were little, and he was a big gambler, so I was not allowed to play, and so I've never understood how to play. I just associate it with, like, the amas in the, like, smoky room, uh-huh. and I'm not allowed to go in. Like, I understood what it culturally meant, but I didn't know the tiles. But I thought they did such a great job setting up the first scene about game theory, because mm-hmm. when they yeah. map it back, yep. and it's, like, the Chinese version, you instantly know what's gonna happen because they've set it up already with poker, which you do understand
exactly yeah.
exactly, like, here's something American audiences will definitely know, and then here is like something that you probably haven't seen or understand, but you there's some context for it, and it makes it, I don't know, like it does make it accessible for someone who's not familiar with Chinese culture at all,
because even if you don't know the game, what's happening in the scene is still like Rachel is basically sacrificing her own happiness because mm-hmm. she loves Nick so much to be like, I'm giving him up for you, Eleanor. Like, and then luckily that's the catalyst that makes Eleanor see yeah. that she's cool.
And it's played
after
out
all.
In the game dynamic as well, right. which was just really good writing mm-hmm. on like two different levels.
She's playing yeah. not to lose. Yes.
Yeah. But I think the fact that this movie, it's representation that we don't normally see. It's you know, respectful.
It's a city we don't normally see.
Yeah, that's
American movie. Like, I just truly did not know that much about Singapore as a city at all. So a lot of those, like, images and, you know, even establishing shots, I'm like, oh, whoa, this is, like, just not a city I see very frequently in my day-to-day mm-hmm. media consumption.
Right.
I was going to say bullshit because everything I do is bullshit.
Wait, Singapore, is it a city and a country?
I believe so.
It's a country.
It governs itself.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a sovereign mm-hmm. state.
So it's like a city state.
It's kind of like Hong Kong where mm-hmm. it's like its own sovereign
state. I see. Okay.
Got it.
State. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah. Sovereign city state. Thank you, super producer Sophie. So basically the fact that we see this representation, it's handled responsibly, that I think is largely due to the fact that it's directed by an Asian man. Mm-hmm. It's co-written by a white guy.
And Chiarelli.
And an Asian woman. It's based on a book by an Asian guy. So mm-hmm. it's stories by this community and about this community. So when that happens, as we see in many of the movies that we've covered, where, you know, if it's Michael Bay trying to, like, depict anything, he does it terribly.
Michael Bay is crazy rich Asians.
Crazy yeah. exploding Asians.
Right. Remember, once was there a geisha in this movie?
Right.
And she was a robot.
But, you know, if it's, like, Ryan Coogler directing mm-hmm. Black Panther, or if it's John Chu directing Crazy Rich Asians, like, that is why we have just the stories and the characters and everything depicted in much more positive ways than we're used to seeing those types of characters on screen.
And it's also just, like, a really well-written movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think the thing with having, like, Asians do this particular movie, I'm not saying, like, all Asian movies have to be made by Asians, but there are particular things that they pay attention to, I think, that help the process along and makes it feel more authentic. Because I think through, like, the Hollywood development machine, you get scripts that are very broad. Mm-hmm. And so there's just things in the movie where you're like, oh, I get it. This is, like, what being Asian is like. And I think John M. Chu, and especially Adelaide Lim, who is a Malaysian mm-hmm. born screenwriter, like, she's he's very adjacent to Singapore, which is also very different from China. It's like it's the island parts mm-hmm. of Asia, which have their own culture and their own way of doing things too. Mm-hmm. So I think that specificity really helped them pull it together.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. One of the things that I wanted to point out, and I'm interested in sort of everyone's takes on this, but the like older men who could be in the story, basically like the patriarchs, mm-hmm. are largely absent from it because we do not ever meet Nick's dad. Mm-hmm. We get to know Nick's mom a lot.
At work.
Mm-hmm. He's like off on business.
Right.
Yeah.
We meet Ama, but Nick's grandfather has passed away, so we never know him, but we get to know Ama. We spend a lot of time with like Nick's aunties, mm-hmm. but we never meet any of the uncles, I don't think.
I feel like this is kind of accurate because I think it's very much like the home life is matriarchal. Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't grow up in Singapore, so I don't know how accurate that is. But I feel like in Taiwan culture, it's like it is very much around the like ama, like in the house. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like doesn't mean it's necessarily elevating women. It's just like the home is their place.
Right.
Like, so it's like kind of a double-edged sword because they do run shit, but also it's like they run shit at home.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know because even like my great aunt, she's like the first female architect in Taiwan. And so she worked. So it's not like she's home because she didn't work. But like at home, it's like everything is about her. So mm-hmm. I think there's like this more emphasis on the woman at home for sure in Chinese culture.
Got it.
Frankly, I found it refreshing not to have a patriarchal figure around.
Yeah, nice. Like, we didn't need a man.
Yeah. And then Eleanor also met her husband at Cambridge. Like they were college friends, so she mm-hmm. gave up like a promising law career to support her husband. So I think that also means, I guess in the subtext, is that she was so smart and brilliant that she was able to help her husband grow her business, which was the acceptable gendered role at mm-hmm. the time. Mm-hmm. But that without, you know, her backing him, maybe like the young empire would not have been as successful as it was.
Right. That kind of seems like the implication.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, it's interesting because I did notice that too. And I think it felt, for me, that felt more authentic, not having the grandpa around or the dads around. But also because it's a story about the mom and the daughter. Mm-hmm. And I think even though that's universal, specifically within Asian culture, like the in-law relationship is also very unique because mm-hmm. there is always like a lot of conflict with that, especially because oftentimes they end up living with you.
Right.
And so then it's like the two women of the house and the son. And that's like a common living situation.
So even in circumstances where it's not like a huge difference in like socioeconomic class and stuff mm-hmm. like that, is there still like kind of like a lot of tension in a lot of those scenarios?
Yeah, I think so. Always. I mean, my mom doesn't get along with my dad's mom and I see it a lot in other places too. Yeah.
I feel like the in-law thing, that is like a universal thing.
Yeah. But I don't think they always have to live with you, but there's kind of an expectation if you're the oldest son, like your mom will live with you as mm-hmm. you get older.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
And so there's a, like you're taking on caring for someone that's not your mom and maybe resenting a little bit because you can't, like, you can't take on your mom.
Right.
Because it's not right to do that because you're... Actually, in Chinese, like, we differentiate, like, your grandma on your mom's side is called wai po, mm-hmm. and wai means outsider. So within the word, if you're a woman, you're considered an outsider of your own family.
Whoa.
So if you marry a man, you're always going to be referred to as outsider within your family, mm-hmm. even by your kids. I mean, not your kids, but, like, your kids' kids mm-hmm. call you, like, outside grandma. So there is, like, this embedded... idea that like the woman side of the family you're an outsider, and so that's why there's so much tension because like let's say you have to take care of your husband's mom and then meanwhile you're treated like an outsider, you're never going to be part of the family and you can't even treat your mom because you've married mm-hmm. out of your family, so now you've left your family to take care of another family.
Yeah, uh-huh. And Eleanor does that especially by handing Nick over for the ama to raise because mm-hmm. she knows that she's the outside person, so she gives her son up to mm-hmm. the family. And so that's also an interesting thing, too, because that means, like, the power is kind of, like, passed between the women and the generations. Like, mm-hmm. the ama is the one who's going to determine the favorite of the next in line when the grandfather's gone. So that's also, like, a cool thing that they did in the movie. I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah, that's all very fascinating.
Lots of tension. Yeah. A question I had, and when we were briefly having technical difficulties, we were discussing it a little more, is the various accents in this movie. Could we talk, because I genuinely just have no context for any. I was like, okay, some people have British accents, and so.
I think a lot of people who learn British English or the Queen's English because Singapore was like a colony at some point, maybe. Yeah. But the accents, I thought you were talking about the Chinese accents. So many of the Chinese accents are so bad. Like Nick Young's Chinese, Mandarin is horrendous, and Rachel's is pretty bad, but that's okay. That's normal for an ABC. But I think the grandma had the best. I think she's Taiwanese. She sounded Taiwanese the way she spoke Mandarin, which they're not Taiwanese, but a lot of, I don't know, that's not what I'm used to. But
the grandma's from Joy Luck Club.
Oh, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But so much of the Mandarin was just bad, and I was like, ugh.
And then the Asian accents, like the Singaporean accent is like very specific too, and not a lot of the actors had like the Singaporean accent because it was like a really international cast. You know, Ronnie's Australian, Awkwafina's from Queens, you know, and Nico Santos is from like here, I think, right?
I think he's the Bay Area.
He's a Bay Area guy. And then Jimmy O. Yang's also, you know, just crazy.
Right. And in like literally every single movie right now too. He's also in the Melissa McCarthy puppet movie.
Is he?
Did you know? Yes.
That's so funny.
Well, Lots of peaks and valleys for Jimmy O. Yang past couple weeks.
If you watch Chinese soaps, whenever they have like a white character, she's usually like very caricature, like blonde girl or whatever. And she's usually some sort of like either like hot model or like evil girl. It's like she's either like really great or really bad. But usually their accents are bad too. So it goes both ways. I think they're just like, well, people here don't speak English. It's usually like a Eastern European person because it's closer maybe.
Right.
I don't know. Whoever's available in Taiwan, Hollywood. Yeah. But it'll be like, I don't know what you're doing here. And you're like, that's not an American. But they'll be like, she just flew in from New York. No, she did not. So, I mean, I'm more forgiving, I guess, because they do it there too. And whatever.
Yeah. Accents in all Hollywood movies, I mean, even like American dialect accents in Hollywood movies can be very like, you're supposed to be from where?
Oh, yeah.
Every time there's a Boston accent in a movie, I just get furious and my head spins.
You know who has a good, Charlie from Stranger Things is British, but I feel like I didn't notice when I watched Stranger Things.
I did know he was arrested for cocaine possession at the airport.
No. Oopsie.
He was a troubled young boy.
Aww. Oh, no.
Okay, we've got to take a break. We're going to go rescue Charlie from Stranger Things.
From his coke pile.
Yeah, we'll be right back.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Thursday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
And we're back.
Rachel, I mean, I love Rachel. She's Constance Wu is amazing, but Rachel's character, I thought, especially for the rom-com genre, we've sort of touched on it already, but like kind of is a standout for, like you were saying, Teresa, like we don't have that meet cute scene. Mm-hmm. It's like clearly portrayed that she has a career that makes sense, which never happens in rom-coms.
Right.
It's always like she is art curator. Like,
I work for a fashion magazine.
Right. She's like, I own a bakery, but my house is huge. So that, like, that trap is kind of, like, where she has this successful career.
She's, like, the youngest faculty member at NYU. She's, like, very impressive.
They go to great lengths to make you know that she is, like, smart, capable, et cetera. And we have a very well-fleshed-out background for her as well, where we meet her mother. We learn about, like, the interpersonal dynamics of her family. Do we see friends that are just her friends, or is she mostly meeting
just Paiklin, I think.
Yeah. Right. I mean, and so I think especially for this genre, she's like a well-written character that we know more about than we would know about the average rom-com lead. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she has a lot of agency. And I like that her and Nick's relationship's very honest. Like, after the fish gutting, she just tells him. And she's like, yeah, it was gross. But I feel like even, like, in real life, a lot of people would be like, well, I don't want to mention it because I don't want to give him the satisfaction. But it's like, no, you should tell him.
Yeah,
like,
right. And he is surprisingly, unlike many, you know, male love interests in rom-coms, like, he's not actively lying to her or actively manipulating her or stalking her.
Lying to her at the beginning.
Well, he withholds information.
That's lying.
Yeah.
But
he's also very committed, which is also something that's really nice to see in a male love interest, because I feel like a lot of rom-coms are like back and forth, who likes who more, and he's always like very steadfastly committed to Rachel.
For sure.
And that's hot.
And, and does something that men never do in movies in any genre, which is apologize when they do something wrong.
Yes.
Where it's like he is lying at the beginning of the movie, but once she is like, hey, you're lying, he's like, yes, I'm sorry. And you're just like, it sucks that it's such a relief to see that, but there's so many. I mean, we just did an episode on 10 Things I Hate About You where, like, the lie lasts the whole movie, and then at the end, she asks for an apology, and Heath Ledger cuts her off by, like, making out with her. And so, you know, men don't apologize in movies. So
Very rarely.
Nice to see his character.
We also don't know what he does for a living in the movie.
Oh, in the book, he's a professor, but also in the book, speaking of lying, so Amanda, his ex, is mentioned in the movie, but in the book, she is his ex, and he had a threesome with her and one of the other girls who was on the bachelor trip.
Yes,
so they bring it up in the book, and it's like, that's why Rachel's so pissed. She's like, you didn't tell me that your ex was coming. B, you didn't tell me this childhood friend of yours that you mentioned was the girl you had a threesome with your ex, and they all want to marry you, so... Yeah, they hate me.
She deserved a heads up about all of that.
Yeah. So we don't, in the book, he's a professor but in the movie, we know, like, what Rachel does and that she's very good at her job. And then, like, Nick is just the guy that she's dating.
Right. I liked Nick's character a lot. But he does at certain points fall into the trappings of, like, man who withholds conversation and then is like, whoops, might be you're already mad, you know. But he does apologize, which I don't even want to give him too much credit for, it, but that never happens in movies.
And so she makes him wait for it. Like, she is obviously heartbroken, but she didn't take him back right away. So I like that he apologizes and has to deal with the consequences.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
has to work for it, as should everyone.
Right.
Where are we going next? We've talked a lot about Eleanor, but are there any thoughts on Eleanor that we haven't
She's so good. She's like in everything. I feel like she's such a acclaimed actress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I thought that character was really well written. Just like, even the idea of her having been treated that way and still doing it is very accurate. Like, I tweeted something, my mom reads my Twitter, just a joke about how, like, my mom was really hard on me growing up or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw it and then responded, like, because I told her, I was like, it's a joke, I don't think you're hard on me. Whatever. She might listen to me. Hey, mom, what's up? Anyways, but, you know, I was like, obviously it's like a joke about having high expectations, even though I know it's for the best. And then she made a joke back and she was like, oh, well, like, I'm not like that, but did you know my mom was like that? And I was like, but you are like that. But she said my grandma once my mom brought home like a test and she said she did the best out of 700 kids. And then my grandma's answer was like, why didn't you get 100%? Right. Yeah. But so I guess it's like the cycle, like an Eleanor character kind of embodies that. Like she was treated that way, but it didn't make her more sympathetic. It made her actually harder because she, in her mind, she's like, oh, you have it easy. I had it harder. Mm-hmm. But she's doing the same thing.
Right. If you kind of compare this movie to something like Meet the Parents, which has a similar premise in terms of just like, you know, meeting your future in-laws kind of thing, in a standard, like, you know, Hollywood garden variety rom-com like that, Robert De Niro's character is like pulling out all the stops to like make sure he's like sabotaging Ben Stiller. And it's just like really goofy and like silly in a lot of ways. Whereas like with Eleanor's character, like, she's very grounded and it doesn't resort to these like really stupid, silly moments. I mean, there maybe there's going to be a movie like that. But in this case, it's just like, yeah, like you can see where she's coming from. Like you can tell based on her background and her upbringing and her like just that cultural context. Like even if we don't agree with her, we're still like, yes, this makes sense. Like this, this tracks for her character. And yeah, she's developed really well, I think.
I was thinking of another in-laws movie. I was like, which apparently is a subgenre of movie.
Yeah.
But did anyone ever see Monster In-Law with J-Lo and Jane Fonda? Right. Where that is such a like classically like woman on woman Haiti, and the reasons given are very vague. And it's just like you just know by the poster that it's going to be Jane Fonda yelling at J-Lo for 2 hours. And if you choose to see that, then you choose to see that. But and so anytime there's like a future daughter-in-law, mother-in-law, or even just like any woman on woman conflict in a big movie, you're like, oh boy, like this could fall into so many like tropes. But like you were saying, Caitlin, like we've been talking about in general, it just like everything is so grounded.
Yeah.
And we're given all the information we need to understand, and both characters grow and have a better understanding of each other by the end. And it is like, oh, that is like a very well managed conflict between women in movies where usually I feel like we're given almost nothing.
Well, the two characters are written as the conflict is sort of central to how they understand themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes the conflict feel so grounded. It's not like you were saying, vague reasons, like I don't like your hair color. Like that's not, not a reason to fight, or like the color of the wedding or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's really how they see themselves in the world. And when that point of view clashes, that's when you get these really strong, you know, moments, but you also just understand what both of them are coming from.
Yeah. Right. Cause speaking of like, I mean, bringing it back to like the Bechdel test, like, because even though they're fighting kind of over man, they're not quite, because it's like they talk, even in that dumpling scene, they're talking about like career and tradition and like values. So indirectly, like Nick is wrapped up in that as an example of values, but like replace it with anything else. Like Rachel wants something that Eleanor has, and their values are clashing. So it's like, it's not really about the man. It's about like, what does Rachel value? Is it like her passion and happiness and love? And Eleanor's like, no, you value hard work and building relationships and
sacrifice.
Yeah, and sacrifice. And that's what love is. It's sacrifice. It's giving up what you want. So therefore you should give up what you want so I can have what I want. Like, that's kind of like what she's saying.
Yeah.
And so I don't think it really is about the man, even though indirectly he is.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Right. And like Jamie, you were saying, like oftentimes if there is an antagonistic female relationship, it's usually because like one woman will just hate another woman simply because she's a woman and she sees her as competition. You know, it's if we see like a high school movie where there's like just like pettiness between two women, it's never really established why that is, or like there's no background or context given as to like why two female characters might not like each other. It's usually just like relying on, you know, the stereotype of, you know, Hollywood being like, hey, you know how girls can't get along? Well, here's a movie about it. So to me, even though this is largely a story about kind of what starts out as an antagonistic relationship between two women, it's not what we usually see in movies. It's like we said, there's the context that explains why they are butting heads. Mm. It's more of a difference of like values than it really is like them, you know, fighting over a man, which is weird to say because one of them is his mom. But like, but yeah, it like I think it's handled much better than it normally is.
It's like a double win too, because it's like you not only have a very well written female conflict, because there is like sometimes in the wide ways there are to criticize movies now and the different mediums to do, sometimes I feel like it gets lost. And I've definitely read, is it Gillian or Gillian Flynn? Is it Gillian Flynn?
I thought it was Gillian.
Is it Gillian?
I don't know.
For the purposes of this little soundbite, it's Gillian Flynn. But she wrote this great thing about like having female characters in conflict and how because it's never historically been written very well, there was sort of like this prevalent criticism that was like, we just shouldn't show women in conflict at all. And it's like, no, you can and should have women in conflict. That happens in the world all the time, but just don't not give us any context for why it's happening. And so seeing it effectively written and it's grounded in who they are as people, like it just, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's some of the best scenes in the movie.
What do you guys think of Araminta, the girl getting married?
For me, I think I don't know if she's complicit in like the really horrible treatment that like Rachel receives, a la like Araminta's friends who like put a fish in her bed.
Right.
Because she knows about this
relationship.
Well,
I feel like she's a good example of... They write varieties of types of rich people. And I feel like she's like almost like one... She's not the worst kind, but she's the kind where it's like they get off scot-free because they're not actually being horrible. So in comparison, they're good. But they also are obviously turning blinders to other people who aren't privileged. Like, they're the kind of people who are like, oh, poor people make me sad.
Oh, they're cute. Like, look how cute they are.
Exactly. Like, she's having this lush...
every once in a while.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, her extravagant party. And then she's like, I want to be cute to invite Rachel, but also like maybe funny, but I'll stay out of it.
Yeah. Right.
Is she the creates one who says the environment for the conflict to happen. Yeah. And then she's like, conflict is happening?
Oh, no. She's like, not at my bachelorette party.
Oh, no. Drama at the party?
I think she's kind of, I don't know if she's actually based on Angela Baby, but do you guys know who Angela Baby is?
No.
She's like one of the most famous people in China. She's just like, she looks kind of like a computer program version of a perfect Chinese person would look because she's got so much plastic surgery. But she's just like on everything. And her wedding was like 3 times Kim K's wedding or something.
Whoa. Okay.
I think she's in some big Hollywood movies where she has like very, not a lot of words.
She's very CG. English.
But they'll put her in stuff to sell tickets.
Got it.
But she's like that. She had like 4 wedding dresses and like a carousel wedding cake and stuff like that. So
Araminta's character was one of the few characters in this movie that, to me, like, I saw it and registered as like, oh, that's a rom-com stock character that's being used in this movie. Another one that I felt like was very, and I think Caitlin, we talked about this after the movie, Awkwafina's brother, and who's like, it's funny because he's a pervert and he's trying to take pictures of her naked. Like, that is such a rom-com-y trope that was like, all right, I guess that's in the movie. Yeah. Sure.
And it goes Awkwafina, she's there noticing it happening, and she's never like, hey, brother, like, stop that. That's gross and creepy. Like, no one challenges it, and it's just, that was, like, the one part of the movie I was like, ew.
Wait, when does he try to take pictures of her naked?
Not naked, but, like.
He's
stalking her. Yeah, like, just the stalker narrative in that character.
I thought it was funny, though. I thought it was because he was going to post it on social media, but I guess that makes more sense that he just wanted it for his collection. I thought he was, famous person.
That's what it seems like at first. Either way, he's taking photos of her without her permission
over and over
over. And then there's a scene where she's like lying in bed with her mom and they're having this like big heartfelt moment, and then like the button of that scene is like him taking the pictures, and they're just like, oh, you, how long have you been there? And he's like, a short while. And they're like, tee-hee-hee-hee. And it's like, no, he's invading your privacy.
And especially that coming as the button at the end of a really well done scene about abuse. It's like, and here's this creepy boy taking pics. I was like, get out of here, why are you in this scene?
It was tonally really weird.
I was like, who let, you know, they're like, hey, Judd Apatow, write the ending to this one scene. Like, let's just see what happens.
Write Ken Jeong's character and that the end of that scene.
Another super stock character I really liked was the film producer his trashy girlfriend.
This
fun comedic.
Yeah. He's like producing a movie where like his girlfriend is tied up and like a guy is like nearby like fighting. And it's like, what is this? The end of Spider-Man 2?
Not Fremelina mentioned. So, yeah, Araminta just read to me as, like, yeah, like, this is, like, kind of a less written out rom-com character.
Yeah, she's a little plotty because everyone's going to her wedding, too.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So she's kind of just serving
only so much
the story.
Let's talk about Astrid.
Astrid, sure. Mm-hmm.
She is the, I would say, other main female character with, like, kind of her own story arc.
Yeah.
And it's there partly to sort of, like, mirror what's happening with Rachel and Nick, because she is this, like, rich, like, charity organizer, socialite,
major,
like, fashion icon
vibe at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's, like, Nick's, like, one relative that he's, like, really bonded with, and, like, they're actually, like, friends and stuff like that. And then she and Rachel kind of forge a friendship over the course of the movie. But then, so her main storyline is she discovers that her husband, who was, like, a military officer, I think,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, he's, like,
but,
a captain in the army.
Michael.
But, like, does not come from a wealthy family, so that was, like, cause for some controversy in, you know, the family where, like, he married into money, she married, like, a poor guy. Yeah, so for her,
I have a lot of thoughts about her.
Please.
Ooh, hit it.
I don't feel like she's as innocent as she tries to act. Like, I think she's the kind of person who wants to be so perfect. She has done all the right things, went to the right school, whatever, looks beautiful. But I don't think she's, like, I think she wants to be with a man of lower status, even though she would never say that to him. But because she enjoys being high status and she enjoys being not wrong. So she, I think in her mind is like, maybe I think in her mind she's like, he would never stray because look what he gets. Like, in no world would he ever get this, and I'm giving it to him. And so it hurts more when he strays. But then when he does stray, she can't be wrong because nobody will be like, oh, what did she do wrong? Because it's like, no, she's like hot, rich, famous, and perfect and smart. So he must not be a man. He must be insecure. It must be his fault. And I think she builds that situation purposefully, maybe subconsciously, but I think she's the kind of person who wants to be always right and always perfect. And that's why she's not actually that innocent.
And there's like hints of that in the movie. In fact, like, her husband's even like, you always, like, have to be, like, the prettiest, most like, you're not, like, reacting to learning that I'm having an affair because, like, you can't be bothered.
Also,
like,
is he having an affair?
Whoa, hot take. Hot Michael take. I'm not one to be a Michael apologist, but I mean, I definitely see what you're saying. That was something that I remember being, like, presented more effectively in the book. Maybe there just wasn't enough time for it in the movie. It's already a 2-hour movie.
They didn't get too much into it, but I think in the credit sequence, they have a quick sneak peek about her running into Charlie, which is her ex. But I think in the book, she's not having an affair, but she keeps talking to Charlie about how she thinks Michael's having an affair. Right. And it's like, you're hiding the fact that you're talking to your ex from your husband. And this is your ex that you almost married. So who is actively in love with you and who you know that?
Like, which is not, like, covered in the movie at all. Yeah, Astrid, so she didn't really have as much to do.
No, but I think she wants to be not wrong. So I think she talks, you know, if she's talking to her ex who's in love with her, complaining about her marriage, she gets to then be the hero of that story to him.
Right.
She gets to be rescued, too.
I appreciate her presence in the story, and I don't know if this was done purposefully or not by, like, the writer and the filmmakers, but her being in the story and making, like, forming a friendship with Rachel sort of balances out the antagonistic relationship that she's having with Eleanor. So the only female relationship you saw in the movie was Rachel and Eleanor, we might be like, oh, that's... like, there's other options.
We get a lot. I mean, we get that relationship. We get her relationship with Awkwafina's character. Mm-hmm. We get a relationship with her mom.
Right, yeah.
Whole spectrum of woman-on-woman interaction.
But I think because she's, like, so rich and, like, you know, this, like, high-status woman, she could easily, you know, ignore or pay no mind to Rachel. But the fact that she's like, I'm going to make an effort to actually, like, be her friend, I think is, like, maybe a conscious effort to be like, hey, look, rich people can be nice, too.
But she cares a lot about her image. Like, she invited Amma to the wedding after Michael left her so that nobody would wonder why Michael wasn't there. And that's why she walked in with Amma.
Oh.
That's why Amma says... that's why she says thank you to her Amma when they're walking down and people are like, oh, she never comes.
Oh.
And so that's like a hint to, like,
how much
this
she
girl
cares
so much about image. She's like neglected her actual relationships. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt the Michael Astrid storyline felt, I mean, I think it was just because it was like more addressed in the book, but like it felt weird in the movie a little bit, where it's like, in the movie I like felt for Michael a little bit, where it was kind of like cut and dry. In a movie that it does very well with a nuanced storyline, there felt a little bit less like, you cheated on me, yes queen, bye. And like that was kind of, but I really enjoyed her relationship with Rachel. That was like presented awesome, and that scene with them on the beach, and like where they're bonding and sad, and you're like, oh, this is great.
And Astrid actually didn't want to go on the bachelorette party trip, because she says to Michael, how would you feel if I like came and worked at the office? And I was, that was the scene where I was like, oh, this is like actually a real marriage. This isn't just like some pretty thing, because like she's offering to give up some like fabulous vacation time to spend time with her husband. And so when she's on the vacation, it very much feels like she's like giving up her husband, and the trip itself wasn't something that she really wanted to do. It was like a consolation prize. So like then when Michael says that like she never loved him, I was like, well, dude, you haven't been paying attention.
Well, so I really do like Ash. I know I'm gonna be super hard on her, but it's because I like her, and she's the one that I feel like I'm the most aspirational to. Like, I would love to be in her shoes, but I also feel like I recognize her flaws of wanting to be this perfect image. But I also don't think that her relationship with Rachel is all that innocent. I think, again, her wanting to be high status draws her to Rachel, because she can be the nice
higher
girl at high status because Rachel is a commoner. And so being around Rachel, she's kind of like immune. Whereas if she gets involved with the girls, she's not immune because they're of her level. And so they can play catty with her too. And she could get hurt. And so I think that it is all very calculated. And I think even her offering to help out at the office is calculated, because it would be taken as an act of sacrifice. And she wants everything she does to be recognized as an act of sacrifice. So I think, I don't know. Like, I really like her, but I also am really hard on her, because I feel like she's like this embodiment of like the sort of Chinese need to succeed and be perfect, but also being so privileged you don't see how you are privileged. I don't know. Just isn't perfect.
Well, the fact that you're able to say so much about her means that she's written in such a way that you can actually like glean this kind of stuff, because so many female characters in movies are just like, we don't know anything about this person or her personality or her background or anything like that. So the fact that she is presented with different, you know, choices and situations, and that you are, you know, kind of reading, you're like,
also she neglects her son.
Yeah.
Like they say, your son wants to see you. And she's like, okay. And then she's like, I'll read him some French.
And like, a language he doesn't understand.
I mean, like, she's like already trying to like make him into this perfect little international kid. It's like, I think he just wants to spend time with you. Like,
but,
she was shopping all day, like
spending $1 million on earrings. Come on.
But 1. Also, 3. I want her life.
In her defense, I would love her those life. Earrings were really nice. They're
really cool.
Should we talk about Paiklin?
Yeah.
Awkwafina, love her. Yeah, I mean, she's like the kind of stock, like, comic relief best friend character, as you see in many rom-coms.
They're like, oh, we're going to hire a stand-up to do this part.
Her main contributions to the story, I think, are making sure that Rachel looks the part, basically. So there is the scene early on where she gives her a dress to wear to the party at Amma's house. And then later, there's the makeover scene.
A lot of people tweeting at us about the makeover scene. They're like, can't wait for the Crazy Rotations episode,
Talk about the
makeover scene. Oh, no, the makeover scene. This is, I mean, for me, this is just a trapping of the genre that could have been avoided but wasn't.
I don't know. I didn't hate it. I love a good montage.
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it's like, the thing about this particular makeover scene that wasn't, I don't know, like it didn't bother me, where our mentions got flooded about like red flag makeover scene. Sure. But the way this one is done, I feel like if it's like, okay, we have to have a makeover scene, there has to be a montage scene, whatever, some good looks are seen. But it's not like the Princess Diaries makeover scene where it's like you're becoming another person and we're stripping you of your identity.
Right.
Which is what so many makeover scenes are coded as of, like, you know, take off the glasses, lift up your tits, like the whole thing.
You're not
of,
enough.
You're not good enough.
Right. Stop right. using three-syllable words, like the whole thing. Like, it's a personality makeover too, where this was sort of just, I don't know, my reading, it was like, all right,
she just needs a nice dress for the wedding.
Right. Basically. That's true, though. The whole thing is, like, you're not going to be enough. And she's like, just watch me become a different person.
Right, right. But
what if she just showed up in sweatpants and was like, I am enough. I'm so enough that I'm going to scale back how enough I am.
Well, she just Kanye's the entire wedding.
So we'll talk about the makeover scene in a second. But I do kind of wish, one of my issues with this movie is that I wish Rachel, who has a PhD in economics, who's an expert in game theory, which admittedly, I don't know what that is. Should have Googled it, but I literally have no idea.
I use game theory in dating all the time.
Oh.
Whoa. Teresa the Game Lee.
You gotta use it. It's all about,
are you a pickup artist?
Cutting your losses. No,
did you read the game? It's just,
no, I don't mean it that way, but I'm your emotional losses.
Oh, okay.
It's not about like trying to pick up people, but it's like the game theory is just looking at all the options and deciding like all the outcomes and the worst, and then going off of the worst.
Okay.
Instead of the best, right? So then if I hide how I feel, the worst case scenario is I'm always gonna be lying to myself. So then no matter what, even if you tell the truth and it hurts, it's still better than the one where you're lying to yourself.
Right.
That's how I use game theory.
Okay.
Got it.
Interesting. Well, I should try that if I ever date again. So Rachel is an econ professor. So she knows about economics. She surely knows that capitalism is maybe not the best thing. So what I wish for this movie is that she just did a little bit more to challenge just the extravagance and the wealth and the opulence and all of that. Because, I mean, anyone who gets that rich has exploited people.
Sure.
They have probably not done some great things, maybe. And then doesn't seem like they're, aside from Astrid, they don't seem to be that charitable. They seem to just be kind of hoarding their wealth and buying these huge... Like, Awkwafina, I think at one point says, like, that house is $200 million. Like, that's crazy. So I just wish that maybe in a perfect world, Rachel would have been like, hey, you guys and all of your wealth, gross. Like, maybe share some of this. IDK. Anyway, basically, I wanted Rachel to be a socialist icon. So back to the makeover scene. So we talked in the Aladdin episode. I think we made the mistake of saying that it's kind of rare to see a movie about a lower status or lower class woman getting together with a higher status guy, but that we weren't right about that.
That myth was busted.
Whoops. Because there are plenty of movies like that. This
Cinderella.
One being one of them. Cinderella, Pride and Prejudice.
Made in
She's
Manhattan.
All that. Made in Manhattan.
A true classic.
Pretty Woman, My Fair Lady, Flashdance, you know, there's kind of different examples.
Mistakes were made.
Coming to America.
Right.
But in many of these examples, the woman does have to get a makeover or kind of lie about her status to be more appealing to the man. So in Crazy Rich Asians, the makeover, as we said, it's literally just to be like, hey, or it's not even a makeover. It's a dress trying on montage.
Right.
So that I can wear a nice dress to the wedding that I've been planning to go to.
And it's not built around a lie. It's
right,
just
exactly.
Something that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like I need to make myself more physically appealing to the man so that he will realize that he loves me. But in movies where it's a like lower status man who ends up with an upper status woman, and we see that in things like Aladdin, Titanic, obviously.
Swish.
Swish. The Notebook, Lady and the Tramp. Dirty Dancing. Uh-huh. Look, I'm not wrong.
Lady and the Tramp.
Yep.
Love it.
We see it like in Star Wars with like Han and Leia even. Like there's all these different examples. Usually in those cases, the man doesn't really have to do much of anything to change. Rarely even changes his clothes. In Aladdin, yes, he becomes a prince, but that I think is kind of an exception to the rule.
The Beast puts on that nice suit.
But he's the rich one.
Oh, true.
He's the prince, and she and Belle is a commoner.
He's the dog prince. Yeah. He's like, I am prince of dogs.
The dog prince coming to CBS this fall.
Honestly, wait, really quick side tangent. Has anyone ever seen the like network series from the late 80s about Beauty and the Beast?
No. Oh, the one produced by G.R.R. Martin?
Yes, yes.
No. Yes. Where,
oh my gosh, it's Beauty and the Beast in late 80s New York City. Beauty is a high-powered lawyer. The Beast
and
is...
she's Linda Hamilton.
Yes, she's Linda Hamilton. The Beast
Terminator.
Is her boyfriend. The Beast is, what's his name? Oh my God.
The guy from Sons of Anarchy. I can't remember.
Huh. Wait, Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman.
Ron Perlman is
Hellboy. Yeah. So it's like Hellboy, Terminator, coupling. Which is insane.
It is. I won't say it's a good show. I'll say it is a wild ride, and I highly recommend it.
He lives in a lair underneath the city, so Linda Hamilton's forced to come see him whenever she has trouble with a case. And he's like growling amongst his books.
He's just like, oh. Let me help you with this case.
Is he a man or a beast?
No, he's a beast.
He's a beast.
He's an actual beast.
It feels like such a weird, like...
Oh my God.
It's like a furry entry.
It feels like such like a focus group workshop show. Of like, okay.
No.
People like Beauty and the Beast. People like lawyers. People like New York City.
I just have to remind everyone that without that furry Beauty and the Beast, we would not have Game of Thrones, because that's where G.R.R. Martin got a start.
It is.
Wow.
So just a quick hot ref for
thank you so much.
The 1987 Beauty and the Beast TV series. Oh,
no. It's real.
He looks like the Grinch.
He does. Like, the Beast looks very uncanny valley in this show. Anyways, what a time to be alive.
To close the book on the dress montage scene, I didn't hate it. It's, I think, there because you can't have a romantic movie without people trying on different clothes. But I think because it's unlike many movies where we see a lower status woman having to basically change everything about herself in order to be usually... physically appealing to the man, because so much of women's worth is attached to their looks, unfortunately. So for a woman in many of these movies to be even a viable romantic option, she has to take off her disgusting glasses and get rid of her horrible ponytail and put on rich people clothes. So that doesn't really happen in this movie. It's really just her trying on some dresses. Could the movie have done without it? Sure. It's not a cornerstone plot point of the film. So it easily could have been gotten rid of, and the movie would essentially be no different.
Well, now that we're talking about it, I almost feel like maybe it is included because this is a romantic comedy, and that is such a familiar scene in that genre. And so maybe it's just like the movie's way of being like, okay, here's this scene, but it's not, there's not the same implied toxicity that this scene would normally have.
True.
Yeah. Well, before that scene, Rachel says to Peckling she's thinking about not going to the wedding. Mm. So the scene sort of serves, I think, as like a supportive scene from her friends, like that we're kind of arming you for the battle of this wedding. Like, this wedding is the thing that you came to Singapore for. And so the clothes are like almost like a symbol of how to get ready for something as big as this, which is kind of nice. Yeah. You know, it's really like about her community helping her.
Right. And that scene is part of a larger kind of sequence where before that they're like eating dinner, and Piglin is basically like gearing her up to be like, you have to challenge this woman, like you need to show her that you're like a fighter, that you are enough. There's that whole like bok thing. And then she says,
worn a chicken suit. That is so funny.
To the wedding?
Yeah.
Like
chicken.
Bok bok, Eleanor.
Yeah, and then at the end of that scene, Rachel's like, what are you doing tonight? She's like, I don't know, probably just hanging out at FedEx. Which
love
is
that
the
line.
Funniest.
Such a wild
That's the kind of shit I would say. I was like, what are you doing? I gotta send the mail. That doesn't take all night. But I gotta psych myself up to do it. And I might not even leave my bed because it's so stressful thinking about FedEx.
It was great.
And then in the aftermath of the wedding is Paiglin, again, being a very supportive friend. And, you know, she goes to stay with her. I really like that friendship and how that all plays out. Yeah, so makeover scene, you know, it's there. It's not the worst example we've ever seen.
No,
definitely so. Not.
When did you guys first cry in this movie?
Okay.
Oh, okay.
We are coming off
when
of
I saw
a...
Henry Golding.
What?
When I saw Henry Golden.
His abs.
Really early.
He's got great abs.
There are quite a few, like, kind of female gaze shots in this movie where, like, when Michael's taking a shower and you're just like,
oh, yeah. It's like, no, but I love that because, like, Asian men, I feel like, often are desexualized in Hollywood.
Yeah.
So I think they made a point to, like, almost so much where you're like, ah, we get it. But they, like, really linger on makeout scenes to be like, look, these are sexual beings. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of Asian people. Where do you think they come from? Sex. Like,
well, it's also a trope in Asian dramas. There's always a shower scene to introduce a male love interest in an Asian drama. There's always, like, gratuitous showering. You're just like, okay, I've seen it all. So it's, like, a nice nod to that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
So we're coming off of our Mamma Mia episode in which I talk a lot about how I'm not a huge fan of wedding culture. I, you know, don't like a whole lot of what weddings are about. The wedding scene in this movie made me cry.
Yeah, I cried.
Each time I saw it, each of the three times I saw it, it's really whenever the lights go down.
Yes.
Like the illuminated little, is it like fireflies or kind of, and then it's so beautiful. This whole movie is very beautiful. When it, so where it really gets me, I know it's crazy.
She's like walking down the river. I was thinking about wet vacs that whole scene. I was just like, the number of wet vacs taken to this rim afterwards.
It's when Nick mouths, I love you, and she mouths it back. And I was just like, oh my God. I've never cried at a wedding in real life. I've never cried at a wedding scene in any movie ever until this one. And I just don't know who I am anymore. So
I cried a lot in the mom scenes.
I cried at the wedding, but I was also thinking about wet facts, about 50-50. I was like, I want to see the scene of the poor people who have to clean this fucking wedding up.
All the PAs.
There's so much. Like, there's just so... Or, like, in the world, in the movie, like, the janitorial staff who are like,
oh, sure.
Well, good for them. Like, and then have to, like, fire up their wet facts. Would see that short film. But anyways, cried at the scene at the end between Rachel and her mom. When her mom, when just even when her mom showed up, I was like, mom. And man, mom scenes make me cry.
Mine was at the very end when Eleanor gives her that look. It's like barely an acknowledgement, but there's like just so much in that moment where I was just like, they get it. And I was all in.
I really liked the restraint that that scene showed too, because it could have been like they met up again. Oh, I'm so sorry for being such a bitch. Oh, it's okay. Thank you for accepting me into your family. And it's like none of that happened. None of that needed to happen.
That like classic. And I always cry at this the version of this scene as well, where it's like, you are my daughter now. And they're like, But you're right. There is a ton of restraint in that scene, and it is communicated with a look, which is nice.
Yeah. Is there anything else anyone wants to say about the movie?
It's not too late to cast me in the sequel.
It sure
isn't. Teresa should definitely be in the sequel.
See to you too.
Yeah. I'll be pickling.
So the only white people you see in this movie who have lines are being racist. Which is
the British guys?
The British guys at the hotel at the beginning, except for one white guy comes in and he's all like, Eleanor, my friend, here, let me sell you my hotel. He's being nice. But other than that, really the only white people you see are either being racist or they are kind of just in the background, sort of the scenery of the movie, much like people of color usually are in most movies. So it's really refreshing.
Yeah, we're so racist in other movies.
I think minorities get to embody racism in movies. That's usually their role.
Right, unfortunately. So this is a movie where white people are treated the same way that people of color normally are in white stories. So that was a great kind of reversal.
There was like an article that said early on when they were adapting the script, a producer asked Kevin if he would consider making Rachel white. And he's like, what the fuck?
How would that?
What'd be like a white girlfriend going to see the crazy rich Asian world?
No!
So glad they didn't do that.
Yeah.
God. That's so of course someone would be like, hey, just throwing this out there.
Have you thought about Emma Stone in Crazy Rich Asians?
Alternatively, maybe Scarlett Johansson's around.
Matt Damon might be free. Create like a gay love story.
The Holy Trinity of Asian American actors. So, oh God.
There's also been some criticism about the erasure of South Asian people. I don't know exactly population-wise what they comprise in Singapore, but we do see like a few brown people.
Yeah, the sea
like,
guards.
Yeah.
But that makes sense to me because the world, like, again, I don't think this world is free of criticism. Like, they're these really rich, privileged people. But I think their world is really elitist.
Right.
So they probably do have a class thing.
Yeah.
Right. And I feel like tonally, it would be nice to see more movies about that, but tonally it would have been weird if we then saw, I don't know, the workers or something, and just like a serious scene about how it's really hard and that
the youngs have oppressed us for decades.
I feel like it would have
just
totally
been off. Give me my wet vaccine. I want my wet vaccine.
Yeah. I mean, we do see the market, and there is more diversity there.
True. Yeah.
I mean, if anything, no movie is impervious to criticism, but that to me would just indicate, okay, so we need more movies showing a wider range of different types of Asian people.
Right. All right. Well, should we determine whether or not the movie passes the Bechdel test?
Yes.
Yes, we should. And yes, it does.
A million billion times.
Yeah, a lot.
I stopped counting.
Right. There's a lot of different combinations. Rachel and Araminta. Rachel and Peaklin. Rachel and her mom. Rachel and Eleanor. Although I would say the vast majority of conversations between women are about Nick.
Or the subtext is Nick. Or I mean, that gets tricky.
Yeah. For example, like when Araminta is like, hey, come to my bachelorette party. And Rachel's like, I'd love to. Does that pass the Bechdel test? Because they don't specifically say a man's name. But she's saying, hey, come to the party that celebrates me being single before I marry a man.
Right.
Kind of thing.
I mean, we can fall down that rabbit hole all damn day.
Right. But there are, like, whenever Rachel's like, Peaklin, you have a cocktail dress in your trunk. And she's like, yeah, I'm not an animal. That passes the Bechdel test.
What are you doing tonight? I don't know. Going to FedEx or something is my favorite pass of the movie. You're like, wow, okay, cool.
And her and the princess talk about something in the front of the
They talk about microloans and how how giving women microloans uplifts the economy. Mm-hmm. So feminist icon, princess, whatever her name was.
She had a name, and therefore it passes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it passes a bunch of times. And like we were saying, speaking to just like the way women are portrayed, I mean, we see a lot of different types of relationships between women, which is good for any movie.
For sure. Yeah. Definitely.
And a lot of twins. So.
And a lot of twins.
Twin representation, all time high.
Oh, I remember the one thing I didn't say that was in the book that wasn't in the movie. She has three Pekingese dogs. In the movie, I don't remember what the first one was called, but it's like Rockefeller and Vanderbilt. But the third one in the book is named Trump.
No!
And they changed it for the movie.
Well, they do say, like, Peaklin says, like, my mom, like, designed her house after Donald Trump's bathroom.
Yeah, that was funny. Yeah. But I think they were like, we shouldn't have this dog in 2018 named Trump.
It's so crazy because the book was written 5 years ago. And already, dystopia.
Oh, boy.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Let's rate the movie on our nipple scale.
Yeah.
Where we rate based on its portrayal and representation of women, 0 to 5 nipples.
Did you feel like how women exist in Chinese culture was represented accurately by this movie, or were there blind spots that were like missed? Because that was the one, I mean, when I was thinking about my rating, I'm like, I just like, I have lower knowledge of like, is this an accurate representation of women in this culture?
I think they had a lot of different kinds of women in this culture too. In the movie, which I liked, I mean, Rachel's the classic like high achieving Asian American. Her mom is, you know, like an immigrant that came up through her own education. And then there's the very wealthy people. I would say there weren't enough average Asian representation, like people who are mediocre. There were extraordinary Asians represented, so that was fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say overall did a good job.
Yeah.
I feel like that. They could probably put like a gay girl in there or something. Yeah. Not a gay guy. Yeah. But they also didn't explicitly say who's gay. I feel like it's implied. So I feel like it's still very much a broad comedy.
Say it?
No. They say rainbow sheep. It's all implied.
Okay. Yeah. coded gay characters, man.
Right.
We gotta say it.
Yeah. Well, the thing with Oliver's character is, listeners, if we have any, you know, queer listeners that want to weigh in about this Oliver character, I think because he identifies himself as the rainbow sheep of the family, I think that's, to me, that's identifying himself as being queer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know if he's coded queer. I think he's like pretty explicitly that way. He doesn't like scream, I'm gay, but he, you know, mm-hmm. by him saying rainbow sheep of the family, I think that's him identifying himself as queer.
Mm-hmm.
I do wonder if he sort of falls into sort of a trope queer character, especially a gay man who loves fashion and is like all about like, look at your earrings and look at your shoes and your dress and like... So I also, the Vita Russo test came to mind, where it's like, okay, is there identifiably queer characters in the story? Would removing them have an impact on the story?
I would argue with his character, it wouldn't make that much of a difference, and that Paiklin would basically take over whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that was another thing where I'm like, this is more of a failure of this genre that this movie doesn't correct, per se.
Yeah, but I also think it's a little bit like, culturally, like, that's probably part that if they started talking about it would just be its own movie, but like, I do think I don't know how accepting his family is of him being gay, so maybe that is one of the reasons he's kind of marginalized in the story, and also maybe indirectly, like, to the main arc as well.
Yeah.
Right. And just, like, mainstream movies are still so hesitant to, like, have out characters.
Right.
I don't know. Like, Rainbow Sheep, I agree that is identifying as queer, but it's just like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could have been handled better. Yeah. Still felt a little bit tropey.
Yeah, for sure. So then, I guess for my rating, I'm going to give it a 4.5. I mean, just the obvious wonderful that this movie exists in terms of its representation. Hope to see many more movies like this to come. Hopefully this is the beginning of a large trend of seeing many more Asian characters represented on screen, many more Asian stories, mainstream Hollywood stories. I think that the female characters who we do get to know, which there are quite a few, are developed well, they're written carefully, we are given much more context and background for most of them than we're usually afforded in most movies. I do wish that Rachel was a socialist and that she was...
I wish she smashed the hammer.
Capitalism.
She invited people to a DSA meeting at the end of the movie.
No, she probably goes to brunch.
Brunch DSA is such a thing.
That's amazing.
But yeah, and I like that this movie doesn't adhere to a lot of the tropes of a rom-com, and maybe because it's not even really a rom-com. Like, it's not about the pursuit and the developing of that romantic relationship. It's a mom-com. But yeah, I think I would say most of the characters are developed well, written responsibly.
Yay.
Hurrah.
4.5 nips. Who are you giving them to?
I'm going to give 2 to Awkwafina. I'm going to give 2 to Constance Wu. And I'll give my half nip to Oliver because I like his character too.
I'm going to give this a 4.25.
All right.
Precise.
Yeah. Because I just feel like, can't give 100% or then we'll feel like satisfied with ourselves and stop making movies. You got to keep, you know, you got to have a little bit of aspirational growth. It's the Asian way.
Theory.
I felt like it was a really strong story, like really well written. All the women had agency. I mean, obviously it's about love, so it's still going to go back down to the idea of like being with a man. But, you know, it works with any, you know, didn't have to be a man. It's... Mm-hmm. Any relationship is hard and meeting the family is conflict and it's all about sacrifice. So I didn't think him being a man and like controlling her life was so central to
the
plot.
And he wasn't asking to control her life too, which is nice.
For sure. Yeah. So high score. And also because Rachel's like, you know, I don't know. She's just like me.
Who are you giving?
Privileged bitch.
Who are you giving your nips to?
I'll give 2 to Constance Wu. I'll give 1 to Awkwafina. Can I give 1 to the soundtrack? I really like the soundtrack.
Oh, go for it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to give 1 to the soundtrack.
Great soundtrack.
And then I'll give the quarter to the director. I feel like he did a good job of realizing a well-rounded vision.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah.
So I'm going to be five nipples because everyone should see this movie again next weekend.
Yes.
Trying to promote it as much as I can. Who would I give nipples to? I would give two to Adelaide Lim, the writer. Mm-hmm. I just feel like there's such great cultural stuff that she did. One to Constance Wu, one to Eleanor, Michelle Yeoh, the goddess Michelle Yeoh. Yes. She's amazing. And then I would agree with Teresa, one to the soundtrack as well, because I think the soundtrack did this really good job of showing like the cultural dissonance of being Chinese and American, and it kind of gave that to the white audience because it was familiar, but it was different at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I thought it did a great job.
Wait, I want to take back one of my nips from Constance and give it to Michelle.
Tough luck, Constance. Maybe next time.
Go back to your syndicated show.
I'm going to go 4.5. I really like this movie. I'm excited to see it again. Like, knowing everything we've talked about, it's like cool to, I don't know, just like I feel like it'll be a slightly different, more informed viewing, which I'm excited for. The only half nip I'm docking it for is the times it falls into the rom-com tropes that I don't love as much. The creepy brother trope, the few things. And I just wish that, and this is, again, a genre thing, but like I wish that Picklin had more of an arc herself other than getting to see cool rich people stuff.
She's already rich.
Right. Where it's like I felt there was room in the story for her to have a small arc of her own, and that character, for whatever reason, just didn't have it. And Awkwafina is amazing in every scene and can do more. So I would have liked to see her be, you know, allowed to do more as a, you know, comic relief character as well. Anyways, 4.5, giving two to Michelle Yeoh because I love her, giving one to Constance, give one to Awkwafina, and I'll just toss my last half one out to Jimmy O Yang, who we didn't mention the whole damn time.
Bernard Tai, he wears shiny underwear. That's what we know about him.
It's what we know. And he gets my half nip.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Teresa and Sita. What a treat. What a treat it's been.
Thank you for having us.
This was so fun.
Would you like to plug anything? Where can people follow you online?
Oh, sure. I have a podcast, which you guys both have been on. It's called You Can Tell Me Anything. So you guys should check it out. Check it out. Yeah. People confess secrets to me. So that's on the podcast places.
Yay.
It's great.
And where can people follow you?
I'm on Twitter at Larissa T, LeresaTee.
Nice.
Perfect.
And I'm on Twitter as Slowbear, SLOBEAR. And I run a monthly show at Interior Define, which is a couch store. But
hell yeah.
You can come and enjoy the couches, and the store feeds you wine and pizza. So
that's amazing.
Look out for it on my Twitter.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming in. You can find us on the Bechdelcast at Bechdelcast on all of the things. If you have any thoughts on this episode, on this movie, we always love to hear from you. We have a Patreon, a.k.a. Matreon, at patreon.com/Bechdelcast, and where we do two bonus episodes a month. This comes out in...
Very end of August. So
end of August. Okay,
you've already heard our Doubt episode.
So we're closing out Jamie's B-Day month. Doubt and Hackers comes out. the feminist text, Hackers, 1995, with Matthew Lillard topless.
Also, don't forget to go to our website, Bechdelcast.com, and there you can access our TeePublic store, where we have all of our freaking merch.
Get your feminist icon t-shirts, get your queer icon t-shirts, get your Alfred Molina feminist icon t-shirts.
Get your cat facts with Caitlin. There were no cats in this movie, but just a reminder that cats do have 8 nipples, and that's Cat Facts with Caitlin. We've got clothes, we've got mugs, we've got wall art. So get
whatever that means.
Get whatever that is and hang it on your wall. Also, if you live in the Los Angeles area, we are doing a live show in LA on September 15th at 9 p.m. It's at a venue called The Ruby on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. We are talking about Edward Scissorhands, and our guest is Maggie Mae Fish. So if you go to our website, Bechdelcast.com, and you click on the live appearances tab, you'll be able to find the link to get tickets. So come check us out September 15th, 9 p.m. We will see you there.
And thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening. Go see this movie.
Yes, please.
Bye.
Bye.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring?
but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Celebrate the end of your workday with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as another busy Thursday flies by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.